The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's January the 3rd, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market closer to the bottom of the hour with Bill Mayer at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the FTC has approved an ethanol merger, and it's a big one. Senate staffers are still negotiating how to fund the new farm bill, and USDA's Keith Collins is out in front once again, reiterating acreage projections for the next growing season. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, I'll remind some of you to pre-register for an upcoming Organic Growers Conference. It'll be held here on campus in the middle of the month. Well, don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, as always on a Thursday, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on this Thursday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March contract up 30 cents at $9.45 for their settlement price. The May futures at $9.52.5 up 30. And July contract $8.12 up 21 and a quarter. May corn futures finished 3.5 cents higher at $4.66. That was the March. The May at $4.76.75 up 3.25. And July futures at $4.86.5 up 3.5 cents. December contract $4.85.75 up 5.5 for the day. January soybeans $12.51.5, 19 cents higher. The March contract at $12.67.5 up 18.75. And the May contract at $12.84.5 up 20. November's at $11.61.5. And the bean pit up 13.5. That, of course, your new crop 2008 November contract. Soybean meal January futures at $3.44.10 up $6.10. And the March contract at $3.50.60 up $6.50. January bean oil futures $50.50 up 54. The March contract at $51.18. 38 higher for the day. Mercantile exchange numbers: February live cattle 94.77.5 down $1.47.5, and the April futures at $97.05 a hundredweight, down the $2 limit. January feeder cattle at 101.80 down 262.5. The March contract at 103.92.5 down 257.5. February lean hogs 56.47.5, 70 lower. April futures down 90 at 62.37.5, and the May contract at 69.40. 7.5, 2.5 cents higher on the afternoon. From the outside markets, nearby February crude oil futures, $99.18 a barrel, down 44 cents. They did top $100 today at $100 and a nickel. March contract at $99, even at this point, down 33 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,084 is up just about 40 points for the day.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the holiday season and the end of 2007, the beginning of 2008, I suppose, have given you many things to think about as you look at the charts. Tell me what you see.
Well, the first thing you look at is that we do have a chart gap on a monthly chart now. Since we did start off the new year sharply higher, we ended on our highs there on the 31st, and then yesterday we opened above the high point that we had there on Monday. So we do have a monthly gap in the charts. For example, December corn, if you look at a continuous December corn chart, you could probably say, okay, there's a gap there at 475. You measure that off of a low somewhere along. I look at my chart here, and we can, we measure it off of the 3.25 low that we had this fall. That was on the December 08. You can begin to talk about, initially we're going to go to 540. Next gap would be sometime up here. Maybe we could go as high as 6.25 on December corn.
And do you turn around? Do you have a downside objective that's just as interesting as the upside objective then?
Well, you will once the market turns. Technicians will go with the trend and continue to, as long as the market works its trend, you'll just continue to project upside targets. And then, you'll watch for daily type price action reversals and whatnot, whether or not they'd be on a weekly basis or a monthly basis, for some kind of sign that maybe a top has come. And then once you start getting some confirmation that a top is in place, then you'll start, projecting downside price objectives. But for the moment, technicians are all looking to the upside, just looking at the different formations that each contract is developing and kind of can project to the upside on that.
Let me be clear about this. Just when you're taking a look at this, is that the halfway mark on the way up?
Well, you got several halfway marks. You can do that, and then you can, without getting too complicated, you can use some derivatives of some Fibonacci ratios for extensions of legs or extensions of moves, and then you can get into some Elliott wave counts or whatnot. So there's every technician will have a little different approach, of what he sees. What he uses, but I do like to use chart gaps. I like to use congestion areas as midway points or measuring points of a bigger move to the upside or to the downside, depending upon which direction the market is going.
Now, am I right? Am I seeing this in the continuation chart that this is that last month we had a gap to the upside too? Is that correct?
Well, I'd have to look at your chart, but yet on a monthly basis, your corn charts are going to have some gaps. Now, I was looking at a weekly continuation, December
weekly
futures, and we had a gap when December 08 took over for December 07. There's a gap in there between 422 and 443, and if you measure that off of the October low about 324.25, you begin to talk about something around 540. But I've got objectives closer by. The first one probably is 517, and then the 540 would be the next one, and you can just keep reading. And then there's a 570, and the highest that I've been able to project at this point is 6.25. So these are just technical objectives. I'm not telling anybody corn's going there. I'm telling you that this is what technicians can read out of the chart formations and different techniques that they can use.
I see. Okay. So what I was looking at was the monthly continuation chart. And on second view, there's not another gap there.
It's a solid sign, especially with the market able to follow through today. We had an awful good up day yesterday. I think there was every reason in the world where the market could expect to see some price consolidation after yesterday's up move, maybe trade inside yesterday's range. But the market was able to regroup here after kind of a soft open and put in some pretty good gains. So, the technicians are definitely friendly this market. Like I was telling Dave, there's been a consensus in the trade for the last couple months that this market should break somewhere along the line, and there's just been no sign of break. And, if you can look on the EBOT trade and you can see that there's always more buy orders or more interest in the market to be bought than there is interest in the thing being sold. So that's why the thing just keeps, climbing higher here.
With that kind of objective for the corn, what do you see for the soybeans? Have we pushed higher more quickly for the soybeans than the corn?
Well, soybeans, you can, November soybeans were right at this 1150, so you basically add another 50 cents because beans do have a tendency to move in 50-cent blocks. I specifically have got like a 12-16 objective, I think, as the next objective on November beans. That one's at least within reach given where we're at today, whereas maybe some of those higher objectives on corn may never, ever be reached, but, they're there.
Mm-hmm. And how about wheat? What do you see there?
Well, wheat, believe it or not, I would not rule out new highs in wheat yet.
Well, that's the one I can't believe. But go for it.
Actually, you could probably begin to talk about 1150, 1145 wheat on the front end. You could probably maybe start talking about some nine somethings July wheat. I think, I just came up with a 924 upside price objective on Chicago July wheat futures. But like I want to caution everybody, these are just drawings on a chart that you kind of look for. As long as the trend stays in place, those are the points that you look for the market to go to.
Well, let me ask you a question. And when you and I work together, some people probably know this. Dan and I worked together when I first came out of school. He was my first employer. You made me put together a projection. This was in 87.
86, 87.
You made me put together a projection for 95 and 96 that would, and this is very funny, that would give reasons why there should be highs in 95 and 96, because you had them, that's where cyclically you had them posted. Did you do the same thing for this time frame, and what were the reasons that you might have for those type of highs?
Well, That was, of course, back then during the pick and roll days, and I know you worked with me when corn did make their bottom in that
correct.
Middle part of February. I think I was in Nebraska. You were in the office when Dees corn, I think, hit $1.51. But I would say what I was looking at there was, basically a larger cycle, about 27 years from low to low. Commodities have had a tendency to move, so you begin to say, okay, halfway distance of that cycle would, give you something 10 to 15 years out that you would see another move to the upside. And, of course, we did see that on corn. Beans didn't make their play really now until about now.
Mm-hmm.
So beans is kind of catching up basically to the corn move. But you kind of look at those longer-term cycles. The commodities do have, 3 years and 5 years and just about any kind of cycle you want to use. And it just takes a lot of study and skill in using cycles to see whether or not you can, get on the right side of that cycle.
Yeah.
If you're on the wrong side, it's a miserable time.
And the top
and
the
I've
top
been
sides.
On both sides of it.
And the top side, if I remember right, is much harder to predict because the troughs or the bottom are more
regular on the bottom side, where the tops have a wide variance of when they can actually come, whether or not they come in the middle of the cycle or they come early or they come late. And for those of us that use cycles, you got to make the call whether or not the market is in a bullish situation or a bearish situation, and then you kind of fade it whether or not you look for the cycle to come early or late.
And are you calling this one a bullish situation?
Oh, yeah, I think you have to.
All right.
I think, a lot of commodity traders have been waiting a long time for this one. Farmers have been waiting a long time for this one. And, you take a look at November soybean futures. Every contract now has made a new record high except July. When July made its high in 1993 at 1290, we went as high as 1285 yesterday. So we're closing in on that. So then July would have new contract highs, or soybeans would have new contract highs clear across the board.
Dan, we appreciate you being with us.
Very well.
Thanks much. That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take a complete look at today's agricultural newscast.
In agricultural news, the Federal Trade Commission yesterday gave antitrust approval to VeraSun Energy Corporation to acquire U.S. Bioenergy. VeraSun says a deal will boost its ethanol output to 1.6 billion gallons by the end of the year. Senate staffers say they are still negotiating how to fund the 2007 Farm Bill ahead of a yet-to-be-scheduled Senate House Conference Committee meeting. Senate Agriculture Committee spokesman Kate Cyril.
The Senate Farm Bill especially came together within a strict budget, yet made important investments in conservation, energy, nutrition, and rural development, passed with very, you know, broad bipartisan support. Our focus now is on maintaining those investments. This is about finding ways that we can get through the funding mechanisms of this bill and the funding levels of this bill, and to further take the temperature of the White House and determine if we're going to have their cooperation as this Farm Bill goes forward.
Cyril says Senate Agriculture Committee members may ask for a meeting with President George Bush to discuss Farm Bill funding. The president has threatened to veto both the current Senate and House versions of the bill. USDA chief economist Keith Collins says early planting projections suggest producers will increase soybean and wheat plantings by 8% over 2007 levels. Corn plantings are projected to fall by 6% over last year. Collins says the high cost of nitrogen will contribute to smaller corn plantings. Collins says corn acres for 2008 will be between 87 and 88 million acres, compared with 93.6 million in 2007, while soybean acres will increase to 70 million, compared with 63.7 million last year. 2008 wheat acres are projected at 64.4 million, compared with 60.4 million last year. Activists lifted a blockade at the U.S.-Mexico border yesterday, ending a 36-hour protest against the removal of Mexico's last protective tariffs on basic crops like corn, beans, and sugar. The tariffs were removed on Tuesday under the terms of the North American Free Trade Agreement. China has announced plans to impose export quotas on flour made from wheat, corn, and rice. Mark Schultz is with North Star Commodity in Minneapolis.
Basically, what that's trying to do is control and keep the prices controlled in China, so they're trying to keep their own food in their own country versus exporting.
China's food prices rose 18.2% in November. That's the largest month-to-month jump in 11 years. Meat and poultry prices increased by almost 39% in 2007. Edible oils rose 35% in China last year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, up next, in the middle of this month, the U of I will host the Midwest Organic Production and Marketing Conference. I'll have all the details. The Midwest Organic Production and Marketing Conference is the rebadged and now multi-state Illinois Conference. This year, it's co-sponsored by Extension at the University of Illinois and Purdue.
So we're in two states now. So we're gonna rotate it back and forth. Next year, it's gonna be in Indiana, but this year it's in Illinois, and it's right here on campus at the Illini Union.
That is Dan Anderson. He's one of the conference coordinators. The Midwest Organics Conference is a two-day affair scheduled for January 17 and 18. He's been doing this for a while and says the 2008 event has one of the best programs ever put together for the show.
Had a lot of help from the Indiana folks in just tracking down some good speakers. And I don't know, more heads working on it, and I think we came up with a better program. We've got some farmers coming in Illinois and Indiana, talking about organic dairying. We have two keynote speakers. One is Tim LaSalle. He's the new CEO of the Rodale Institute, coming, and we have Mark Castell from the Cornucopia Institute.
Anderson says Mark Castell's dynamic speaking style, combined with the Cornucopia Institute's reputation as an organics watchdog, make him perhaps the most provocative speaker in the country on issues related to agriculture, organics, and small farms.
January 17th, 18th, so it's two full days. That includes an organic reception the evening of the 17th. We're going to have some local entertainment and then also some local and all organic food. And it's $95 a person before January 7th. After that, it's $145 per person. We have a special $25 for students. That's for both days, so big discount for students, $25 a student to come. We want to draw as many students as we can that are interested. So, and another thing is that I want to point out, our keynote sessions, we're opening those up for anybody to come in for free. We especially want professors on campus to come. Feel free to come to those for free, and then if they want to stay for the rest of the conference, they can register at the door, but they can come to the keynotes for free.
The Midwest Organic Production and Marketing Conference keynote addresses are scheduled for 2 p.m. January 17 and 12:30 p.m. January the 18th. For full details, search Google for Midwest Organic Production and Marketing Conference. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
It's a Thursday afternoon. Time to take a look at the cash grain market. Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois, joins us by phone. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Base is holding up as we move to higher levels?
Well, yeah, the corn base is staying pretty steady. Soybeans, we have moved in the last week here or so from the January to the March, and as we made that move, we did weaken the bean bases up a little bit, but pretty typical for what we've seen through the growing season and through the harvest and up to now. The, you know, bean base is just really hasn't ever had to do a lot of work because the futures are doing all the work for them.
Indeed. Are farmers calling in much disbelief as the markets march higher?
A lot of questions as to what's going on. You know, is there some fundamental reasons out there? A lot of interest in what grain's left. There's quite a bit of course, a lot of money changing hands here in the last few days. A lot of corn movement, too. We're seeing, you know, corn come in with this cool weather and the, you know, the lots frozen and stuff. We're seeing some corn move.
You think that this kind of move can be sustained over the next several days or month or even longer than that?
Price-wise, futures-wise?
Yeah.
I guess I'm starting to see a little bit here, Todd, and I'll say yes. I mean, I think anything in this market today can be maintained and can continue to go that direction because I think we've just got a lot of excitement, a lot of emotion in it. But I am starting to see a little bit on the demand side as you talk to – I have a few hog producers at this point, and they're, you know, they're getting to the point where even if you look out into the spring period where some of the prices look pretty good, hog-wise, the corn price has just pretty much eat up the profits, and we're looking at, you know, locking in losses if we lock anything in out there. So I think we're starting to get to the point where we're seeing a little bit of question as to can this demand stay where it's at.
Yeah, so really it's a matter of will those big producers of hogs, I suppose, and maybe poultry as well, will they start to liquidate some of their flocks or herds?
And I think we are starting to see some liquidation in hogs. Of course, you know, nowadays most guys have some kind of contract. I mean, they're not just going out here in the open market, but some kind of a minimal price on a contract. But even that, you know, isn't looking very good right now with the corn prices.
What are your bids for the day?
Cash corn is $4.39 and beans $12.08.
Thanks much. That's Bill Mayer. He's with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Urbana-based Community Blood Services of Illinois says its supplies are at record lows. The holiday period is typically slow, but CEO Pat Kovar says this year's holiday period has been the worst, with just 109 red blood units as of yesterday. If things don't pick up, he says the shortage could have the greatest effect on those suffering from cancer and other serious illnesses who use the most blood. Blood types O positive and negative and A and B negative are needed the most. A Danville man has died in a one-vehicle crash after he was reportedly involved in a high-speed chase with police. An autopsy is being held today for 22-year-old Alexis Torres. His car flipped over on Jackson Street last night on the city's south side. Authorities are still investigating the incident. On this day of the Iowa caucuses, Illinois elections officials are reminding residents that if they want to vote on February 5th, they need to register or update their records soon. Registration deadline is January 8th. To register to vote in the primary, people must be citizens of the U.S. and be at least 18 years of age by that date, by February 5th. Illinois' primary is traditionally held in March. State lawmakers hope the earlier date will help the presidential campaign of Illinois Democratic Senator Barack Obama. Indiana Democratic and Republican leaders are asking the governor to pick March 1st for the special election to replace Representative Julia Carson. State Democratic Party Chairman Dan Parker says he and State GOP Chairman Murray Clark had agreed on that date, which is a Saturday. Parker says he believes the weekend election might result in better voter turnout. Both parties will have caucuses to pick their nominees to complete Carson's term, which runs through 2008. Her grandson, which Indianapolis City County Councilman Andre Carson and Marion County Treasurer Mike Rodman have filed for the Democratic nomination, while Democratic State Representative David Ortlicker has formed a campaign committee. Carson, the six-term Democrat, died December 15th. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, providing independent commodity and financial analysis to clients throughout the United States. Risk Management Commodities Incorporated has offices located in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason on AM 580. We're joined on a Thursday afternoon by Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, to take a look at the weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Yes, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, it got cold. Some farmers have been moving a little bit of grain as they've been able to get into the bin sites. Frozen ground, but it's going to thaw out maybe over the weekend.
Yes, it will. As a matter of fact, it's going to turn positively balmy, considering with the kind of temperatures you've just experienced out there. We're looking for temperatures to bounce back over the next few days and come up with readings tomorrow in the upper 30s, perhaps, in the afternoon. On Saturday, we look for the low to mid 40s. On Sunday, the upper 50s, and then we keep them in the 50s through Monday. Cool off a little on Tuesday with maybe another front system coming through, but the air behind that air mass, behind that front won't be nearly as cold as its current air mass, and we'll only see lows in the mid-upper 20s before the temperatures bounce back again. So it looks like we're in for about a week or maybe close to 10 days of relatively mild weather.
And if you look around the rest of the Midwest and maybe into the hard red winter and soft red winter wheat areas of the nation, Southwest and Great Plains and the northern areas, what do you see for them?
Well, we're looking at pretty much the same situation for that area of the country. They weren't quite as cold. This cold air came down across Iowa and southeastward through Missouri and Illinois into Tennessee, and the tail end of it wound up in Florida with some freezing temperatures there this morning. We don't look for any temperatures to be below the 20s in the heart of the winter wheat belt, Kansas, southern Nebraska, and down then through Oklahoma and Texas. So it looks like a favorable week for wintering wheat. Maybe get some of that snow thawed out and melted and provide some moisture for the springtime.
Turn your attention to South America. Tell me about the growing conditions in Argentina and Brazil.
Yeah, in South America, we've it had been a fairly cool season up until recently this summer, which is ideal in summertime for crops down there. We're now looking at temperatures that are running mild to maybe even a little on the hot side in the Argentine, but staying cool in Brazil. And as far as precipitation is concerned, we have no problems there. We see a good amount of moisture in the northern part of southern Brazil up through Minas and the Mato Grosso areas for the next 5 to 6 days, and then that'll gradually shift southward. Dryness continues to be, or I should say, a returning problem to the Argentine, though. It's going to dry out there, and they may start to get a little concerned on moisture.
Pete, we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure.
Thanks much. That's Pete Levitt. He joined us here on the Closing Market Report to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast each and every Thursday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the agricultural markets right here on the pre-opening Commodity Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.